So, Zach, welcome back. And what we might as well focus on the fact that there's snow around a lot of the region today and talk about the things you do in driving in snow. So if you've never activated the four-wheel drive in your on-demand four-wheel drive and you think you can climb over a four-foot snowbank with it, what's the actual truth there?
Well, that's going to depend a lot on the ground clearance of your car, I think, Jeff. Thanks for having me on. A lot of modern systems are not actually four-wheel drive. They're all-wheel drive, meaning you can't turn them on and off on demand, like you said. But if you did want to try a big challenge like that and plow through 4 feet of snow, you're going to want some ground clearance. And Subarus, like so many of us have, as good as they are in this type of weather, they don't have a lot of ground clearance, so you're probably not going to get very far if your wheels come off the ground.
What are they, like 8 inches, 9 inches off the ground?
Eight at the most, I would think, yeah. And they're getting higher now. The new Outbacks have more clearance than the older ones did, and that is a nice improvement. You kind of see how cars are getting bigger all the time. It looks as though they're getting bigger, and it's the same with the Subaru.
You realize when we get into these discussions, a lot of the things I'm asking about are mistakes I've made myself. There have been times I thought, well, you know, this car's got good traction. It's getting down there, and it's actually touching pavement, so I think we're good. But then, of course, the snow gets so high between the tire ruts that the car can no longer go forward anymore.
Exactly.
Yowza. So while we're at it, why don't we talk about steering and things you should and should not do in steering with a car in snowy weather?
Yeah, you know, steering and traction in inclement weather like this really, really depends on tires. And so I just thought it would be appropriate to take a minute and talk about tires. Your steering is not going to be very effective if the contact with the road, the point of contact, is the rubber. And good tires are just priceless. And so tires for the winter weather nowadays have siping built into the tread, and it used to be that you could go and get your tires siped at the tire shop, which would...
It's actually a bit of slashing of the rubber, isn't it?
Yeah, these very shallow, perpendicular slashes in the tread, they're perpendicular to the direction of rotation, and what that would do is create a little negative pressure every time one of those slices would be pressed on by the weight of the vehicle, and it would kind of create a suction cup. Well, nowadays, they actually design little slices into the tread for that exact reason. And that would be in like an all-season tire would have a little bit of that. And it just makes a huge amount of difference in ice and snowy conditions.
So as an automotive shop, though, do you deal with tires much at all? I mean, you're not a place that sells tires, right?
Actually, we do sell tires now. Yeah, we invested in some equipment. Part of it was because we got tired of having to pay retail prices for tires ourselves. But also... there's just, you know, people like to have choices. And, so we started offering tires and got a wholesale account, a couple wholesale accounts actually. And, so we're working with them, and there's a lot of, other systems out there that require tire equipment, such as tire pressure monitoring systems. And that, is a really nice new, feature on cars that alerts the driver if one of your tires becomes low on pressure, and so that you can catch it right away before it becomes a problem. And a lot of people are experiencing that light coming on for the first time with maybe a 2 or 3 year old car. This light comes on and the icon looks like a tire that's gone flat with a little exclamation mark in the middle. And I would really just encourage our listeners, you know, don't ignore that light, because the whole purpose of the light is to be meaningful. And on an all-wheel drive car, like we've talked about before on the show, if you ruin one tire, you have to replace all four. So it can become very expensive very quickly if you ignore a partially flat tire, and then that essentially ruins your sidewall driving on a tire that's really low on pressure.
Squishes your sidewalls out.
Yeah.
Zach Edwards is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange for this month's edition of The Squeaky Wheel. He's the proprietor of Ashland Automotive and has a very, very deep history with working on cars, both pre- and post-computers. You can join the conversation on the Exchange with your vehicle woe or story of vehicle success. 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Are the tire gauge lights fairly reliable? reliable. I ran into a rental car service person over the summer who said, yeah, those things are off and off by a couple of pounds.
They're pretty reliable. What can be off by a couple of pounds is your tire pressure. And that, with conventional shop air, that combination of nitrogen and oxygen is really susceptible to temperature. And so when it gets colder, your tires can lose a couple pounds of pressure, and that could break the threshold of what does or does not trip that light. And so what a lot of shops are switching to now is pure nitrogen, I believe, and that's you have to get a special setup to do that. But it will inflate tires with a combination that's not so susceptible to temperature. But yeah, the lights will they'll come on and go off per temperature if you're out just hovering around that lower range.
Okay, so it's within a safe range, but it would still be showing a light?
Yeah, and it's also looking for difference from one tire to the other tire. So it's not just looking for one tire being low, but it's looking for all the tires being within a range.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Yep. All right, so yeah. So let's talk about the tires and wheels and alignments and stuff like that, because I've gone through this many times. The idea that
I see the eye roll over there.
Yeah, when the car starts pulling, for example, if it seems to always pull to the right or pull to the left, whichever direction, what's going on? Is it a low tire? Is it your alignment going out? What are the things you should ask your mechanic to look for?
Well, you shouldn't have to ask your mechanic to look for anything, but just tell them the symptoms, and then they'll kind of know what to do from there. But certainly, a low tire is going to cause your car to pull in that direction. So a low tire on the front left is going to cause your car to pull to the left. But there's also alignment angles at play, and those angles can be adjusted. They generally don't come out of adjustment on their own. It's usually like hitting a curb at some speed or a pothole or the wear and tear of suspension components. So worn shocks and struts or worn control arm bushings, which is a really common Subaru problem. You can have, there's stabilizer bar, or I guess they're not really called stabilizer bar, but there's linkage track bars, and those all have bushings. And there is steering components that can wear out, and that can cause the car to wander. Sometimes your car feels like it's pulling to the left, and sometimes it feels like it's pulling to the right, and there's no real rhyme or reason to it. And another thing that a lot of people aren't aware of is that when they engineer the roads, they actually engineer them with a little crown so that the water doesn't sit on the road.
So they're meant to fall off to the right, aren't they?
Yeah. The right and the left, mm-hmm. So the road's just crowned that way. Mm-hmm. And so if you're in the right lane on a crowned road, you might notice the car wants to pull a little bit to the right. And if you're in the left lane on a crowned road, it would pull a little bit to the left. But a lot of roads, once they're failed, they don't have any crown anymore. And you might notice that. I think Hersey Street is a great example of a road in rough shape in town right now, and there's no crown left on that.
Ah, okay. I started smiling a minute ago when you talked about the wandering and the steering, because this is another, basically I've had pretty much all the things we talk about here. And my first car was a 73 Dodge Dart, and there was a bit of a gap there. You could move the steering wheel about an inch or two on the top, and it really wouldn't affect the direction of the car. And I actually got pulled over at one point by a cop in Town Creek, Alabama, who thought I was drunk. And he said, oh, I can see you're not drunk.
Yeah.
I said, no, that's my steering.
Yeah, those cars drive more like a tractor. If you've ever driven a tractor. Yeah. And modern cars, they're just, the steering is so different and so tight. It's really quite nice, unless you really favor the tractor feel.
Very responsive steering. Zach Edwards, our guest on this month's edition of The Squeaky Wheel. Your automotive questions welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I don't see who the sender is. Email account is called Charter. And this writer wants to know, is all-wheel drive the preferred engineering, I guess, versus four-wheel drive?
Well, that's an opinion, I guess. I prefer all-wheel drive, but all-wheel drive does come at a cost in terms of fuel economy. Some people like to be able to switch from rear-wheel drive to four-wheel drive, which is usually how it works in a truck. But with SUVs and smaller, you know, the all-wheel drive sedans, they're almost always all-wheel drive. As a matter of fact, I can't think of a recent model that had the capability of switching in and out of four-wheel drive in a small passenger car. But a good example of a older model car that could do that was the first Subarus, like the Subaru Brat, had a four-wheel drive lever, and you could switch it in and out of four-wheel drive. And also the Toyota Tercel, the old Tercel wagon, which I don't know if you remember Eric Allen, who used to host here. He had an old Tercel with a four-wheel drive capability.
Mm-hmm. I remember the Subaru GL and DL with the button.
Yeah.
To get the four-wheel drive.
Yep. They went to a button after their first models. And that was a really nice setup, but I think that probably they just, the engineers just, you know, took the choice out of it because most people didn't want that, and, you know, they're marketing to the masses. And so all-wheel drive is a really convenient way to offer enhanced powertrain management.
It does, however, use, if you have a choice between two and four, four is going to use more fuel, isn't it?
Yeah, because you just have more powertrain, more power being transferred, you know, twice as much, actually. Instead of just one set of two wheels, you've got power being transferred to all four, and that's going to take away from the engine and make the engine work harder.
The Squeaky Wheel on the Jefferson Exchange with Zach Edwards, 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. We welcome Karen in Mount Shasta to the exchange.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
You were talking about the car pulling, and when I had my 86 Honda Accord, it would pull to the left when I would speed up, and it would pull to the right when I slowed down, and it ended up being the rack and pinion. And I was wondering, can that still happen in my, I've got a 04 Accord now.
All right. So that was just the steering rack and pinion that was doing that.
Yes. I had to have it replaced.
Wow. Okay.
Something fixed in it.
Yeah. Thanks, Karen. I remember, so it was pretty common on those Hondas and other Japanese cars in the 80s, they would experience what was called torque steer, where one of the drive axles, the CV axles, was so much shorter than the other one that it would get more power more quickly. And so under acceleration, if the front left axle, which I think it was the front left axle, was very short, they almost call it a stub axle.
So it was less resistance, basically.
Yeah. And so it would get more power than the front right wheel. And, or it was some combination thereof. Maybe it was the right axle, I can't remember, but it would pull a little bit under acceleration. And so that was pretty common. Certainly a power steering rack and pinion, like a tie rod end, which is on the end of the rack and pinion, being out of adjustment could cause the car to pull as well. It generally wouldn't happen only under acceleration, but it could. It's not out of the realm of possibility, but those older Japanese cars, they did have torque steer issues that were kind of discovered later
after they'd gone a few hundred thousand miles.
Yep. And so they've figured out ways around that as well, but it can still be felt sometimes on some newer cars.
Karen, thanks for the call. Very much appreciate that. And another automotive mystery there. So we were coming back to tires and the tire warning light. I was going to ask you, Zach, about if you should ever feel comfortable ignoring any warning lights or codes. I mean, is there anything you can just go, oh, I'll get to that. You know, I'll see the guy in a month and it'll be fine. I mean, is there anything that you should be that lax about?
You know, there used to be a day in my career when I would advise people that it'd be okay to ignore that. And I just don't anymore because I cannot, we just can't foresee the indirect results of ignoring any warning symptoms. And that's really what the light is. It's a warning light. It could be on for one of, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 different reasons. And one reason might be rather insignificant, but then there could be something else happening with your car that would want to be turning that light on as well. And by ignoring the light for a period of time, you might be ignoring more than one symptom now. One may be rather insignificant, but the other one may not be. And
so a couple of different sensors then could be turning on the same light.
Yeah, yeah. And we had a customer in the shop the other day. It was over the holidays, and we had been, she'd had a tire pressure monitoring system light on for quite some time, and I was really trying to encourage her to just go ahead and get it taken care of and get the problems fixed. And she asked about the price, and I told her, and she said, no, just don't bother. And so when she came in to pick up the car, I took one more run at it, and I said, you know, we'd really like to see you get this fixed, because you're going to be driving somewhere and you're going to end up with a flat tire, and you're not going to have had any warning. Some of the sensors were bad, so she didn't have any low tire pressure. She had two bad sensors in uh-huh. the tire, which needed to be fixed. And she was saying no, no, no. And once I don't know, something registered with her, and she became physically upset and started crying and said, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. I had a family member die from a flat tire. Please fix my tire pressure monitoring system. It was like a light popped on.
Yeah.
And she didn't really know why. She was not wanting to fix the car. But I think a lot of times we don't realize cars are really dangerous. And having a flat tire that you could have prevented can save lives. So, and not just your life, but the other people. If you have a blowout in the front left tire, that's going to send you into the left lane. So if you're on the freeway,
into the oncoming traffic,
yeah, or into a car passing you, right. You're in the right lane and you have a blowout, sends you right into the car next to you. And these things really happen, and it's tragic when they do. And people, I think I often say, if these were flying machines, we wouldn't ignore these lights, you know?
Yeah, very true.
But because we're driving down the road, we somehow think it's not as important, but it is.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about psychology and memory and how those come into play in car care. I had a friend who, I just hate stopping for gas. And so she actually ran out of gas once, and because I'd been berating her about feeling that way. And she said she was cursing my name as she was walking with her gas can down the side of the road. So, yeah, the things we learn as kids can kind of stick with us about car care, and they're not necessarily applicable anymore.
Yeah, you don't want to ignore things, because we just see it every day. It's what we do for our work. But every day we see things that have been ignored cost far more money than had they not been ignored. And I know that sometimes for people, it's just a matter of money. And if they have it, they have it. If they don't, they don't. That's why, you know, we offer financing at our shop, but other shops are starting to do that too, because you just want to give everybody every option and opportunity to take care of the problem, because it's going to save them money in the long run.
Yeah, deferred maintenance, not a good thing for the vehicle that you go hurtling through space in at 70 miles an hour. So that is the world we live in. Zach Edwards is our guest host once a month for The Squeaky Wheel. He is the proprietor of Ashland Automotive. We always have a list of questions for him, and we'll have another list of questions for you in a month. Always good to see you, Zach.
You too, Jeff. Thank you.